on the friendliest region in the state, Region 4. The land of hospitable, intelligent, nice people. No, Region 4.
Good question.
Deputy Director, Commission members, before we get started, I thought I'd take this opportunity to kind of give you a real quick briefing on some new and exciting things that we've implemented and we're working on here in the enforcement program. We've just completed several aggressive hiring cycles, and I'm happy to report that we have 6 new officers in the queue, and one of those is currently a seasonal park ranger in the Olympic. He's got quite a bit of experience. We interviewed him yesterday, did really well, and he wants to go to Forks. So maybe we can eat
the land of criminals over there.
So we've been very aggressively recruiting from military and local colleges in the state, and it's been paying off. So we've interviewed over 100 folks, backgrounds, and we've settled on 6 now. And I think that'll bring us up to pretty close to full staffing. I think we have a total of 9 or 10 now, and with the promotion of 2 more sergeants in Region 5, that number will increase by a number, another 2. So on another front, Director Unsworth has asked us to renew our focus on AIS protection. We have reassigned Lieutenant Anderson from recruiting and training to head up the AIS program with Bill Twight, and we are looking at the legislative funding or bills that are going through the legislature right now. So we're going to take the step right now to initiate a temporary sergeant's position and some SITECs that will be used to initiate the program and start on some real aggressive check stations. And if the funding is successful, we're going to move forward with an enforcement detachment, if you will, with a sergeant at the helm permanently and some SITECs that will hopefully help us prevent invasion of AIS species into the state. Heard this morning the discussion on the potential conflicts associated with the different philosophies now on the Columbia River between Washington and Oregon. And just so you know, we are scheduled to meet with our counterparts in Oregon on February 16th. So we will start to develop those protocols and strategies on how our officers will handle potential violations on the concurrent waters. You'll be hearing more about our new position during our breakout session today with Commissioner Wecker, and about how we plan on expanding our outreach and our ability to interact with a more diverse group of stakeholders. We're pretty excited about this. I believe our new outreach person is in the back there. I saw her a few minutes ago, Becky Roberts. So this is an effort to allow us to broaden not only our program, but the agency support with external stakeholders and increase legislative support. And we hope the position will be able to generate more public awareness regarding the mission goals and unique skills of not only all our agency employees, but particularly with Fish and Wildlife police officers and their relevance to fish, wildlife, public health, and safety. Position will establish a means by which citizens and various stakeholder groups will have much more input and involvement with agency staff and with our program. So with that, we'll move on to Captain Myers. We are here today to provide you with the 5th of 6 regional enforcement presentations that we have designed to highlight for the Commission an overview of regional law enforcement operations and the unique challenges we face in each region. So So today, highlighting for you from Region 4 will be Captain Alan Myers.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you for having me today, Director, Deputy Director, Mr. Chair, and esteemed commissioners. Thank you so much for having me. And I hope today I can give you a little bit of a picture of the region that I command, which is a very, very diverse and extremely important region for the department. Please feel free to ask any questions if you have any throughout this, and I'll try to keep it as brief and as concise as possible to hit the key points that you might be interested in. I know that a couple of you are from my region, and I really appreciate the support and the interaction that those commissioners, Mr. Chair, you recently had with one of my officers and others that have had the opportunity to ride with them. They are some of the classiest, most professional, most dedicated people in the state, and I would put them up against any other police force there is around as far as being the best of the best. So let's talk about Region 4. First, I'll give you a little bit about myself. I'm Captain Alan Myers. I hail from Idaho originally. I grew up in southern Idaho and was able to reap the benefits of a wonderful recreational background of fishing and hunting. And as I progressed through my teens and into my early 20s, I was an avid sportsman, and that's what drew me to Resource. And eventually, after going into the military and serving as an officer in the military for several years, I wanted to seek an opportunity in law enforcement, in conservation as well, and find a way to mesh those two in the best possible way. And I found a program at the University of Washington that could help me do that. So I'm a UW graduate. Go Dogs, and proud to be,
yes.
and happy to represent that school as well. So coming out of that, I've served for over 16 years with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. I was recruited right out of college for the department, and I've served all throughout the state on all four corners pretty much, and have seen the majority of my career on the east side of the state, the dry side of the state. But over the past several years, going on six now, I've been back on the west side and very, very happy to serve here. So let me dig right into the heart of Region 4, which is really what matters, not me so much as the people that work for me. So here's excuse me, here's my team. You'll see that these folks here are represented currently representing four different detachments that we have that are the breakup in Region 4. Region 4 consists of those counties in the northeast corner of the state from the Canadian border all the way to King County. So we have that pocket of the state that is the most populous pocket of the state. It's where the majority of people are. And as such, when we have so many people in these urban environments, we also have the majority of wildlife conflict interactions. This is where you're going to have the vast majority of bear and cougar interactions that we have to contend with on a regular basis, and that we currently are in throughout the year. There's no season for human wildlife conflicts. It's continuous. For example, if you have been paying attention to the news, you'll hear about the Vashon cougar that is continually hitting our radar and is continuing to be chased around that island. That's just one small example of the human wildlife conflicts that we deal with in this populated region. What's also important to note is that being the most populated area of the state, this is also the epicenter for commercial wildlife, commercial fish resource trade. This is where the majority of markets are. This is the majority of receivers, of storage areas, and all of the major commerce occurs, well, not all of it, excuse me, but most of it occurs in this region. Now, that's a huge task, and you can see that small group of people there that are tasked with upholding that and enforcing that. I could use triple that amount of people and still scratch the surface for the type of environment and diverse resource that we have to enforce in Region 4. There's four different detachments currently in Region 4, and you can see I have about 27 people that work for me there currently. We're trying to build that number up, but at our max, we'll have 30 people in Region 4. So we're down a few folks, but the chief, as he said, is looking to hire folks currently, and hopefully we'll fill our vacant FTEs in short order. We have those four different detachments. Detachment one is our Seattle detachment. That's the one that's based primarily on commercial fishing and that very rich market environment. And they are the ones that are steeped in huge, large-scale investigations year-round involving major large dollar poaching schemes and at events. Detachment 10 is the inland King County detachment. These folks are your primary tip of the spear when it comes to bears and cougars interacting with those urban sprawl environments in King County and the Issaquah, Sammamish Valley areas. These are the folks that have to wrestle with that continuously, because bears don't just go to sleep anymore in the winter. They still continue to come out, especially when there's trash around, and cause us all sorts of problems. Detachment 11 is going to be our Snohomish County, Skagit County, and Whatcom County Inland Detachment. These folks are tasked with a huge variety of resource and challenges that include those upriver systems that are so highly prized in the ESA realm, which, like the Nooksack, the Snohomish, the Stille. These are extremely contentious systems that have a huge nexus with tribal interests and state interests as well, that these folks are tasked with helping to protect and preserve the species that inhabit those. And then finally, Detachment 13, that's our Whatcom County Marine Detachment that also covers San Juan and Skagit. These are the folks that are your tip of the spear when it comes to the Canadian border incursions, those southern resident killer whale issues, as well as many, many, many other types of commercial and sport fishery challenges that they face. So as I present today and go through some of these points, I'm going to just briefly tell you that our projects and priorities are based on what you know well, which is our law enforcement strategic objectives and framework. So this is the document in which we build our priorities off of. And this is what I'll be telling you as I go through the priorities that we have focused on. And there'll just be a few here, because I would take up way too much of your time if I did the whole gamut. But you will see that I'll be referencing those projects and priorities off of our strategic framework. This was established by our chief. So here's some of the regional priorities and project plans that we have in place. One of the main ones is our improved gravel-to-gravel protection to establish protection of ESA-listed species. Now, this project was not just solely a Region 4 project, but a statewide project, especially on the west side we were tasked with. And part of this was to identify those key ESA systems where species were at the forefront of problems and that we needed to focus on. And so we went about an identification of that, because of course there's many, many rivers that are important to us, many, many habitat issues that are important to us. We have to, in order to attack that problem, find a way to focus on these in a systematic way. And so this is what my project to do. We went about identifying and mapping some of those key systems and came up with a sort of a framework in which to prioritize my officers' patrol responsibilities. And those include the Nooksack, the Stillaguamish, and the Snohomish Rivers, as well as the Green. So you can see that's going north to south throughout the region. But these are huge systems that even if you're not from Region 4, you might hear about, because they're such a monster when it comes to resource challenges and what is at stake when it comes to preservation and protection. Another one of our regional priorities is reducing illegal activity on public lands. One of the specific focus areas that we did in this project was look at the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area. The Snoqualmie has been really contentious because of some of the issues that we've encountered, the new challenges we've encountered with non-consumptive users. So non-consumptive users have adopted these wildlife areas and have become very vocal in their desire to use these. Now, non-consumptive users in this case are your bird-watching folks, your folks that are not hunters or fishers necessarily, but are people who interact in a different way with wildlife and wildlife areas. These are the dog walkers. These are the people that I'm sure seen emails and heard vocal in some of your commission meetings about what they feel they want for our lands. These lands that were set aside originally specifically for hunters and fishers are now a prime target, especially in urban environments, a prime area for non-consumptive users to use. So Snoqualmie wildlife area issues are one of those focuses that those focal points that we're working on to address and help folks with, and has become a priority for our project, for our region. Another regional project has been to provide effective and timely response to dangerous wildlife incidents. Of course, you know what can happen in the blink of an eye if we're not extremely responsive to dangerous wildlife encounters. And no more so than in an urban environment is it imperative that we have a group of people charged and ready to respond than in these urban environments. So one of our key problem areas, of course, for this is King County. Urban sprawl has caused a major issue with bear and cougar conflict. And those folks that go out into the suburbs to build houses on hillsides that were traditionally rich in wildlife are now having those encounters, either positively or negatively. So it's our job. We're the folks that are the ones that are called when they see that black bear walking down the street or going after a trash can, which is a huge problem in those areas. And, of course, the folks that we have in King County, Snohomish County, Skagit County, and elsewhere work diligently to respond to these in as timely a manner as possible. But it's a very difficult challenge, but one that which we prioritize. Another priority is our expanding of our state's illegal, undocumented, unregulated involvement. And this is the IUU piece that I'm sure you've heard Deputy Chief Sensi and Chief talk about before. IUU is important, again, referencing the fact that Region 4 is the paramount location for markets for commercial shellfish and fish within the state. It is imperative that we are engaged in the IUU piece of our mandate, which falls under the JEA, our Joint Enforcement Agreement with NOAA. Now, we focus on this king crab issue because this is a niche that we've been able to carve out and find that, as you've heard in previous presentations, our area in Seattle, in that Seattle market, brings in 80% of the world's king crab market. We are the hub of that, 80%. That's a huge influx of product that comes through our region and through our state. And that, and not just within that port, but it's spread throughout other ports, but we're in that area are the primary port. And as such, we found that it's an environment ripe for potential illegality or corruption, and it has become important for us to get engaged with. So I know you've heard a lot about that probably in the past, and if you haven't, I'll be happy to take questions for you, but I'll move on from that incredibly complex issue. Okay, I'll talk quickly about some regional challenges and the major investments that we've made this year that we'll touch again on our refer back to the strategic objectives and framework that we introduced with. Some of those include the North of Falcon fishery closures. I know you're very averse and familiar with these issues, but it was a hugely impactful on our region, and I'll talk about that a little bit further here. We also had a challenge with the Southern Resident Killer Whale Grant, which is a large money grant, over $1 million, that was expiring last year, and we were very, very focused on working on getting that renewed. We had a catastrophic engine failure in Old Double Ugly. That's number 6, and that's one of our workhorse premier vessel platforms that helps us engage in law enforcement effectively, and also does the majority of our heavy lifting when it comes to marine resource enforcement in that Whatcom County, Skagit County, Island County, San Juan County area. We had problem wildlife in urban environments, as I touched on before. That is an ongoing issue and continues to be an ongoing issue. But we had some big blow-up issues involving communities, entire communities, last year that were up in arms about the fact that there were bears around and cougars around. And we had to spend an inordinate amount of time discussing the problem is not as much as a bear problem or a cougar problem as it is a human problem. But that is a long educational process that we engaged in. We had a big focus on sanitary shellfish patrols and monitoring as a concerted effort. We wanted to spend a large amount of time on a problem that has potential far-reaching health impacts to the communities that engage in shell fishing, and specifically since a majority of those beaches in my region are toxic. You don't want to harvest shellfish from those. Yet people do, and they do it for a variety, a myriad of reasons, including subsistence, including a way to support their drug habit, a way to support other illicit marketplaces as well. So this was imperative that we focus time on, and we spent a lot on that. Another major investment was expanding our sources of vessel purchases and maintenance. As I said, we had one major vessel platform starting to fail, and then we also had a need for a major vessel platform in the King County, Everett, Snohomish County area as well. And so we spent a lot of time focusing on how do we come up with a creative funding source that doesn't break the bank internally, because there were some federal and grant sources out there that we were wanting to go after, and we did that. We also had several major shellfish and poaching trafficking cases in the Puget Sound area. I'll highlight a couple of those for you here in just a little bit to give you kind of just a tiny flavor of some of those, but they were hugely impactful on the amount of time that my staff had to devote to these large-scale commercial poaching issues. We also spent a lot of time on developing a brand new dive team. This dive team is very important, and I'll have a piece on it at the end when I talk about our special teams. I'm managing this team currently and can tell you that the investment made in this was well worth it. We also worked to expand and improve our wildlife service dog team. Wildlife service dogs, currently the part of the team that I manage are the KBDs, and I think that they've been here before to present, and I wish I had one here as well. They'd be a heck of a lot prettier than me sitting up here, but you would be enamored with that dog and not be able to hear a word I said. So, but we'll show you pictures here in a little bit. Okay, so as I gave you that outlay of the different challenges we face, I'll kind of touch on some of those and kind of expand a little bit further on those on them to let you know how we didn't just identify the problem, but we worked to solve it, because I think that's what really matters. It's not just saying, hey, we got problems. It's how do you fix those? So we had an unprecedented breakdown in the negotiations at North of Falcon. And as you know, you were in the middle of that throughout, and so were myself and my officers in big ways. The tribes and the problem was that the tribes and the state talks led to an impasse. And as a result, there was a shutdown of fisheries in most of the major Puget Sound rivers and lakes. That was, of course, very upsetting to not just tribal entities and state entities or commercial entities, but extremely upsetting to the constituents that we serve within that region. Now, the impacts on enforcement was we're the tip of the spear for the complaint department, generally, when it comes to the folks, especially within those areas. And as such, we took a massive amount of complaints and had to deal with a massive amount of noncompliance issues and misinformation that was going about at that time. It started a lot of rumors and a lot of people clashing over what was going on and what was their government doing and what was their department doing to help them. And my agency and myself spend a lot of time working on that that solution, which was to work hard to educate the folks on where we were at currently and where we were going to go forward in the future with potential solutions to the problem. The current status, of course, is that the state and tribe returned to the table and they came to an agreement, and that relieved a lot of the pressure from the closures that occurred. Once the public started seeing that the systems were opening back up and they were able to go out to their favorite fishing spot and continue to fish, that started to alleviate a lot of that pressure. But we still have echoes of that North of Falcon fish closure to this day. I still receive many, many calls and many, many complaints and finger-pointing on what's going to happen in the future, as you well know. Okay, I'll move on now from that piece to another one of the problems, that focus areas that we talked about, which is a little bit of a lighter fare, and that's our Southern Resident Killer Whale Grant. So as I said, it was expiring last year, and we needed to find a way to renew that because, again, this is over $1 million in grant that is gained to the agency, and extremely important for us to carry out our mission. So the Southern Resident Killer Whale Grant was one in which we worked on and embarked on to renew. We applied for this renewal, and it took a lot of time and a complicated process in order for us to show that we needed the renewal at the same level we had in the past, if not greater, and that our efforts in the past were not were very fruitful, and in fact that we showed that we're very successful in showing that the efforts that our enforcement team did in the past yielded very positive benefits for helping to protect the Southern Resident Killer Whale. And as a result, through that very time-intensive renewal process, application process, we were awarded the grant, I'm happy to say, for $1 million.
Thank you. Just a couple questions on the Southern Resident Killer Whale.
Yes, sir.
So who what's the source of the grant money? Fed?
Yes, it's NOAA.
Okay, NOAA. And the commission talked about this issue at our last conference call, and that is right now NOAA is being petitioned to open up the or to re-look at doing a no-go zone along the west side of San Juan Island, and so my question, I guess, is so instead of adopting the no-go zone last time, NOAA adopted a expanding the area where you can't access, I think it's 300 yards, I guess. I can't remember.
The encroachment on the whale zone.
Encroachment. So, and I remember this. I was very much involved in the discussions and in the public comment. At that time, as I recall, NOAA did not really have any enforcement capability. So is that enforcement of that protected area, or the buffer area, I can't think of a better term to call it, but is that purely then WDFW's responsibility in terms of enforcement?
It's not purely our responsibility. There are NOAA vessels and NOAA enforcement, but they're extremely limited. And so you're not too far off. It's not that they have no one, it's that they have very limited resources. So the majority of the lift is ours. Yes.
And then you work, though, my understanding, closely with local authorities, right? In addition to your own deployment. Here's a question. What do you think in terms of your observations, the compliance with that current regulation, that 300 don't get close regulation?
Sure, yes, sir. So we have a 200-yard buffer.
200.
Yeah, and 400 yards from their path.
Okay.
So it's kind of that you can't set up 400 yards in front of their path as they're moving and feeding, and 200 yards from the lateral sides of them or behind them. And that was expanded from a 100-yard buffer that was previously in place. So compliance for that, we're seeing a definite trend, and so far that as this has built out, and as people, we've started off just with, as we do with any new law endeavor, which is a stringent long period of education, peer education, in the form of contacts and hey, did you know, those kind of vessel interactions. But there was also a series of public meetings that were established and held with the commercial entities, because of course the commercial boats are the prime user group out there, especially during that whale feeding time frame in the summertime. There's you'll see a mass excursion line of these commercial vessels out there, and originally they were some of the bigger violators. They were some of our bigger problems, because they'd want to get the biggest bang for their client's dollar and put themselves right on top of these whales. So initially we held large scale public meetings or sort of community meetings where we educate those folks on the new rules and regulations. And then we had many boat-to-boat encounters where we did this education process. That had a good impact initially. Then for those folks that, as the years progressed, we started to do a mix of education to ticket writing to get the word out there that this is enforceable and that there are consequences. Tickets to the most egregious violations, of course, or the repeat offenders, that kind of thing. And now, as we progress, we're seeing compliance improve greatly, especially with the commercial entities. They are, when you go out there on any boat patrol, you click on your marine radio, and you'll hear them as soon as they see us. they've got code words that go out, and you know, they have some sneaky little term for us, but we all know what they're talking about, and they are to the letter of the law doing right and making sure that they're not violating those boundaries. So our presence has had a really great impact on helping protect that sensitive species. Now on the sport side of the house, where you have the smaller vessels moving up and down that area, that's an ongoing compliance problem that we're looking for creative solutions to work with. I know that NOAA's no-go bubble sort of mapping and sort of idea is one interesting example of that. Be very, very difficult to enforce a no-go in that area. That's a huge, massive area. And I know we have meetings scheduled to talk more about that, but that would be extremely difficult to enforce a pure no-go. A slow go, potentially, but anyway, that's kind of where we're at, and I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. That's good information.
So earlier we had a discussion about licensing and registering guides on the Olympic Peninsula for fishing. I have done quite a bit of kayaking up there, and if there was a group who kind of pushed the rules around, it was some of the guides, and I wondered if we register them up there or license them or have any enforcement over them at all. As well, the issue was that they also take up all the public camping spaces. and there's just no way to get around it that I can find. So I just wondered if we, what are we doing about that slice of the commercial entities?
Deputy Chief, you.
So we regulate them in terms of how they interact with the whales, but we don't license the activity, the whale watching community. And you know, I have to reiterate what the captain said. You know, compliance has really, really gone up. You know, there's concern over the presence of the whales as conservation agencies are, and you know they want that business to continue. You know, frankly, we don't issue a lot of citations. We provide a lot of education. The citations are preserved for those folks that are truly harassing the whales and not, oh gosh, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time and I got caught with my pants down and here's a whale. And our officers are good at discerning between intentional and non-intentional activities. There's a bill in the works right now to add some mental state, mens rea, to a civil infraction, which makes no sense. When essentially that's built into the current law. You know, if you're caught and you do these things, disengage your vessel, et cetera, you're good to go. And we don't just show up on scene and go, aha, you're too close to a whale, here's your citation. Our officers are there for the duration of the day, observing human behavior and the whales and using good judgment and discretion. And that's why this grant's so important, because it provides us the ability to be there on station that we wouldn't have before. But we're also cognizant, and I think this is where you're going, Commissioner Kehoe, that, you know, we've got some stakeholder groups out there that are also impacted depending on what decisions are made. As an agency, we're going to spend some quality time talking about what our position is, so that NOAA can be informed with respect to our you know, whatever the director's policy call is on this, on their proposal. But I'm absolutely convinced that human behavior was adjusted in a very positive way, given the presence of Captain Myers's team. And the idea of further regulating that whale watch charter industry through some sort of a license, that's been discussed in the past. But right now, they just have to behave like anybody else in a vessel, and they're subject to the same penalties that the average citizen is if they misbehave.
Thank you, Deputy Chief. Anything more on that?
No, I think my guess is the Commission will be talking about this in future meetings.
So moving on quickly through this WDFW NOAA grant, I'll show you some photos here and just touch briefly on these. This grant's so important because it gives us 50 extra dedicated patrols a year just to preserve and protect the southern resident killer whale. It's also supplying funds for a one-time, for one officer full-time. That's Officer Taylor, or Officer Kimball, Taylor Kimball. We also fuel and fund and provide enhanced electronics packages for our vessel platforms in that area throughout the region, and that's extremely, all the fuel that those boats take up, this is a huge, huge help to have this grant. This grant also works with Soundwatch, and it has pass-through funding to help Soundwatch and be partners with us on this to help those us fulfill the mission of protecting the southern resident killer whale. This last year, they did a change with this grant, and they rolled it into the JEA, and as a result, that had some challenges when it comes to how we appropriate and use those funds that were rolled from the grant, which used to be a standalone grant, but now it's part of our JEA. So again, it's even more imperative that we attempt to secure this, and we did. Here's some of the examples of what I talked about a little bit. You can see the private commercial vessels set up in a skirmish line to watch whales float by. There's examples there of some encroachment that occurred, whales going by a sport boat, very, very close, and well within their legal boundaries. We also have, as a result of these whales and this project, we have a huge amount of media and VIP tours that we get requested, and that my staff is gracious enough to be able to participate in. And so there's an example where we have some media on board. And I know we were lucky to have the director up this summer to see some whales as well, and other staff from the commission. Okay, drones, of course, you've heard about. These were a challenge that we faced in 2016 with drone incursions. A new way to break the barrier, the buffer between whales and the public is to fly drones right in on top of them. And we had several cases involving drones this year. They would take these drones and basically put them right on top of pods and just sit there and photograph them and video them, causing potential harm to the pods, and especially to their newborn pups or their newborn whales. Okay, other issues, of course, to give you just some brief pictures there. There's a whale with a leader in its mouth that it probably bit off of some sport fisherman's line. Some commercial incursions, some commercial interactions, and of course, when you have brand new whales, that's always a huge draw to the public, and always increases our need to be out there and be vigilant. There's an example of a boat prop strike on the back of one of the killer whales, and that's something that we have documented to have happened, and why it's so important that we're out there. Okay, I think I'm probably bumping up against a bunch of time, so I'm going to try to get through as much of this as possible. But you just give me the hook if you need me out of here. You just give me the hook.
Is it barbless? Or?
If, as long as it's barbless, right? Because I'm a put and take kind of guy. So, so we repowered our vessel. This is double ugly. Of course, it had a big engine failure. We needed to procure $130,000 in order to help us repower that vessel, and we were able to do that. With some creative funding, $130,000 from the gauntlet was what helped us primarily get that boat back on the water, and it's back in full service. There's double ugly. You can tell how much of a workhorse it is from that, and couple of my folks there that are pulling those illegal pots and piling them high. And I know you guys like to see that kind of work being done by our office.
Are those the Canadian pots?
Yes, sir. And that's just one day out of dozens and dozens and dozens of, that we engage in this activity. Sweeping illegal pots is a huge deal. Okay, we also worked on and focused on the port security grant that I touched on. This port security grant was a very impactful and a great problem to solve. We had an aging vessel fleet, and we needed creative ways to find it, new sources to fund our vessel needs. The solution was to help prove to the federal government and the ports that we are an important entity on the water, and we wanted to increase our visibility at the federal level so that we could be competitive for receiving those types of grants. And the result was we got $750K total from this grant. This was spearheaded by Sergeant Olson and his team, Officer Wah Kim and Officer Mike Apple. They put together this grant that secured $750,000 to help us purchase a brand new boat. This is federal dollars, and so it does not come out of state coffers. And we built a new vessel. This vessel was allows us to increase our statewide law enforcement influence within the waters of Washington State. This federal funding also allows us to take a greater leadership role in radiation detection to help stymie the influx or the potential threat of terrorism within our waters, which you may or may not know is a major function of some of our marine vessels out there. And this role also gained us the attention of positive attention of the U.S. Coast Guard port our captain and the port director for the Domestic Nuclear Detection Office. That, along with our membership into the Marine Maritime Security Committee, was what we used to enable us to secure this grant. And there's our newest vessel, vessel number one. This will be stationed out of Everett. This is a three-engine vessel platform made by Safeboat. This is a Ferrari. This thing goes 70 miles an hour on the water with these big 350 horsepower motors on it. Yeah. Now, you can barely see it, but on the top there, there's these. There's the piece that we were required to do, which was help with the fight against terrorism, which is our radiation detection modules that are on the very top of that vessel. They're low profile. You don't even know they're there, but while we're out there doing our job, picking pots, checking fishermen, we're also making sure that bad guys aren't sneaking across our borders. Major shellfish cases that I talked about, if I can at least touch on one of these. These were large-scale crab and shrimp poaching and trafficking that occurred within the central Puget Sound. These brought us to the reality of the significance of what unaccounted-for catch can do. Irreparable harm to not just the resource, but to our sport and commercial impacts on the non-tribal side for quota. These were huge, large-scale poaches that impacted that directly, and I'll talk to you about some of that. Detachment, this was an investigation led by Detachment 1 and our special investigative unit, our statewide investigative unit, which is our detectives, and it resulted in the successful apprehension and arrests. So the first tribal case that I'll highlight there, this is a quote from our prime suspect. And in this case, our prime suspect was the co-director for the Fish and Wildlife Council for the Tulalip Tribe. And this was a statement he made in custody. This occurred, started in March 28th, 2015, and it took us all the way, it's still pending currently with the State Attorney General's office as far as charging goes. But it took us well over 5 months for the on-ground investigation and many, many more months for the follow-up. Here's our suspect coming in and being contacted by Sergeant Olson during a routine contact. This is what started off this entire investigation. Just a simple routine, hey, how you doing contact that developed into a major commercial poaching investigation. Through our investigation, we were able to put surveillance on these individuals that amounted to trackers that we placed covertly on vessels and vehicles. We had covert tracking and following of suspects over many, many nights and months and weeks involving numerous suspects. We were able to observe photograph document illegal pots, illegal poaching that amounted to hundreds and hundreds of pounds of shrimp and crab that were being poached out of the Puget Sound, Central Puget Sound area. Here's some pictures of baiting the suspects baiting their pots illegally, close season. Here's them returning with no pots that they've dropped in the middle of the night and coming back to port. Here's our suspect being covertly photographed as he comes ashore with, this is one tote, but he had dozens of other totes full of shrimp that he had poached close season. Again, hundreds and hundreds of pounds that he was taking close season out of the Puget Sound and selling to the dark markets. Those dark markets consisting of nail salons, teriyaki joints, and any manner of different illicit markets. There are multiple transactions that occurred at behind coffee stands and in and throughout Linwood area where money was exchanged and sometimes drugs. One of the big buyers of this illegal poached product was a buyer who would frequent the car wash in Linwood area there. If you've ever had your car wash in that location, just know that's just a big popular spot to buy poached crab and shrimp. We also documented the subject not just poaching at night, but stealing boat motors from other vessels. There's an example where he stole a boat motor off of a vessel that was beached and moored out there. And there's the picture that one of our covert officers took of the stolen boat motor in the back of his truck. This, again, involved not just the exchange of cash for poached goods, but drugs for poached goods. So he would take some of the proceeds from this and purchase drugs use the cash and purchase other types of illegal products. This gentleman sitting on the Mercedes was one of our last covert video surveillance missions that we had with this individual, where the suspect was seen trading in a bunch of poached crab and shrimp, and while they were doing that, they sat in this Mercedes and snorted a white powdery substance and waited to negotiate the amount of drug or the amount of crab that they were and shrimp that they were going to go ahead and steal. We used different types of sources for some of our surveillance, including working with our partners in State Patrol to use their infrared technology to fly at night and watch these folks pulling in pots illegally at night and poaching at night. That's right there out of Everett. And then we'd watch them come in and offload their dozens and dozens of containers of illegal product. Here's the case results. We had 40 total felonies filed, 12 counts of unlawful trafficking first, which was a Class B, 8 counts of Class C felony, 16 counts of other violations of commercial fishing. You can see 2 counts of theft, perjury, possession of controlled substance, and providing false information. This, again, spanned over 5 months.
What was the range of penalties?
So that range of penalties that you saw there went from the highest of Class B felony all the way down to misdemeanor.
They haven't been prosecuted yet.
Since 2015.
Yep.
Yeah, they're currently, like I said in the beginning, they're still at the AG's office waiting for final charging. Okay.
Is it a fair question to speculate in terms of penalties? No. Okay.
I'll cruise through the second piece here because I believe I'm running out of time. This is another case, and I'll just touch briefly on some of our folks that I talked about in the beginning. Our WDFW dive team is up and running, and it's expanding. We have 4 new divers now. This enables us to do work under the water, which is incredibly important for the geoduck duck industry, and which is our primary focus for this team currently.
Is Taylor in one of those shots there?
He's the one taking the picture.
Oh.
That might be him right there in the water.
He never looked better.
Yeah. And then again, our KBD team. This is our KBD team. One of the members is retired that is on there, but those are our Karelian Bear Dogs. And those are the current team of Bear Dogs that we have, Karelian Bear Dogs that we currently employ, minus one, which we expanded to. We brought in a new puppy named Jax, and Jax is stationed in Spokane, and he is extremely important in that Spokane area to help with our moose problem. And I hope you've had encounters. Very good, very good.
You need a couple of those.
Yes.
And there's just me talking about our newest dog and how important he is and all the successes of this Karelian Bear Dog team. I know you've seen those folks before, but I can't stress enough how important it is for us to help with to have help with these human wildlife encounters and incursions than it is to bring in one of those dogs to help us solve that problem in a non-lethal way. And there's nothing better at an event than when you have one of those puppies on the stage. And I'll quickly just go through these future goals because I know you've heard enough.
I noticed that you were rushing through the poaching slides that you had political implications, and these were tribal members, so I assume that's what you were referring to. Could you expand a little bit on
relations, ma'am.
And all?
So you know, as you would expect, when you deal with a political entity such as a tribe, and you have an enforcement action that touches on one of their key principal members, then it's going to have some resonant effect. And in this case, it did. But I think we can work this in a positive. I can spin this in a positive way. Initially, there was a defensiveness, a defensive reaction from the tribe. But then we worked hard from the beginning to develop a partnership with their tribal enforcement, and that was key in making it a success. Our investigation was successful because of our tribal partners. With the addition of our tribal partners. Now, as with any tribal entity, there is at times a gap in their tribal enforcement and their tribal policy. That's just the way it is. So oftentimes we have a completely seamless relationship with tribal enforcement. We are all police officers, we're all law enforcement officers, and we're usually really good at getting along together. But when it comes to policy, folks, sometimes there's a message disconnect. So we worked hard then to figure out a way that we can bridge that gap so that we can have their folks, the tribal enforcement folks, feel confident that they can convey the message that we're working closely with our state partners with their in order to stop these problems that encroach on us both. They touch on us both. These are bad guys that hurt the resource that we all care about. And so making sure we figure out ways a strategy to bridge that gap was imperative. And the way we did that was to come up with an enforcement agreement, to work on an enforcement agreement that's still currently in the works. But that enforcement agreement with the Tulalip tribe in particular, I think will bring us into a more modern age of communication and enforcement that can really, really help stop some of these major poaching events that deplete the resource so badly. Now, it's infancy, and I won't give you any promises that it's going to be seamless or that it's going to be painless. But we're hopeful, and that's about all I can say to that. Deputy Chief?
Thanks, Captain.
Okay. Okay.
Well, the obvious question, is he still the director of Fish and Wildlife for the Tulalips?
No, ma'am. He was fired, okay. But he's still very engaged. In that culture, of course. Any other questions? Okay.
This is the most painful work we do. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And I will say, too, we're also working with other tribal partners, too, to work on enforcement agreements as well that help us in that same type of mission accomplishment. It's not just the Tulalips. There are other tribal partners that we're interested in working with as well. So you can see our future goals. We're working to improve our dangerous wildlife response by building out our KBDs and other strategies for non-lethal removal, which is important to our constituents. We're in an age where you can't just shoot the problem away and bury it in the backyard, and especially in a region where it's essential that we come up with non-lethal strategies for helping with these problems between humans and wildlife. And then we're also looking for complete these enforcement agreements that I talked about with the Tulalips and the Stillies and other tribal partners. And then we're looking at our major work to outreach to local prosecutors to help them understand how important it is to uphold fish and wildlife crimes. When we bring those tickets to those folks, we want them to care about that and to help us prosecute bad guys. So I'm so sorry for rushing through some of that, but I probably just went way over my time limit. But I surely want to thank you so much for your patience with me. And if there's anything I can do to answer questions, let me know, and I'm always available. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Captain. Very informative, uplifting, and a little depressing. I guess that's life. The plus. And Deputy Chief Sensi's silence speaks volumes, so. As usual. Any other questions? Okay, well, hearing none, thanks again.
Thank you.
Go out there and protect us all. And just, Captain, I reinforce, I mentioned it to the Chief, I had a great time with Taylor, outstanding young man, and a proud asset for the department. So.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Okay, well, that, I'm sorry about moving the lean update till after lunch. That's